I can't believe this story, Gwen. This has got me really fired up.
Yeah, how fired up are you?
I just love the idea of it. So our guest today, Brandon, he is doing something that's a little bit out there, but has a huge return. The guy is living in a van in the parking lot of his employer. Did you see him on the news, Gwen?
I did see him on the news. It's very exciting. I'm really glad that we got a chance to talk to him because he definitely has a really cool story.
Yeah, so he's making major financial strides and the story is awesome. So we're so excited to bring him on the show today. Let's go to it.
Welcome to Fire Drill Podcast, where side hustles, savings, and creativity lead to financial independence. With your hosts, Gwen from Fiery Millennials and Jay from Millennial Boss.
Hey guys, we are pumped to bring this guest on today. We have Brandon here, who is famous, and he became famous a few years ago for living in his truck outside of his employer in Silicon Valley. So Brandon, welcome. We can't wait to have you on.
Hello, and thank you.
And I also have my wonderful co-host, Gwen, hiding in the corner.
Hello.
Yeah, very feeble, but she'll perk up soon.
I'm here.
So Brandon, why don't you kick it off by giving everyone a little background on yourself?
Yeah, sure. First of all, I'd argue that I had my 15 minutes of fame sometime in 2015, and since then it's tapered off to a much more modest level. I have been living in a box truck, not even converted, just a U-Haul truck that I bought secondhand for the past 2.5 years, utilizing all of the perks that the tech company that I work for provides to handle all the necessities that I would normally need from a home. So I have gym, food, pretty much everything that I could want or need out of life from my employer. So yeah, I've been living in this truck for about 2.5 years now, and I maintain a blog called FromInsideTheBox.com, where I talk about generally the philosophy of why I do it, some of the interesting things I've learned along the way, and how I'm saving for, I guess, eventual early retirement.
So we need to go back to the beginning here. Why are you living in a truck, and where did this idea come about?
Great question. So I guess I interned out here in 2014, and I was doing what all the other interns do, is you take your housing stipend and you blow it on a dramatically overpriced apartment. And what I noticed for the 3 months that I was out here is that I was basically waking up first thing in the morning, catching the first bus into work, working out, showering, eating breakfast there, doing some work, eating lunch, doing some more work, grabbing dinner, and then hanging out with friends on campus or somewhere nearby. And basically, this kind of turned into a pattern where I was only ever sleeping at this overpriced apartment. And otherwise, I was out exploring and or at work. So I got a full-time offer to come back out here the following year. And I decided I had read some stories about people trying some smaller alternative living situations. And I said, why not? We'll give it a shot. And so the first thing I did when I moved out here was I purchased the 16-foot box truck that I've been living in.
Whoa. Okay. So how much did you purchase it for and how did you outfit it to be livable?
So I purchased it for $10,000 flat out. I used the cash from my relocation bonus that would normally have gone to a deposit or something. To say that I outfitted it is definitely an overstatement. It's still definitely just a box truck. For the first month or two, it was literally just a mattress and the suitcase that I had moved out here with. And that was it. Over time, I've done some quote, home improvement projects, unquote. And so now I have a reasonable bed frame. I put in insulation a couple years ago. I have a sneaky secret door that goes from the front to the back of the truck. And I have a sunroof. So I guess mildly more livable, but nothing in the way of modern amenities like electricity or internet.
So it's not the picture perfect tiny living situation that you'd see on Pinterest or on some website.
Yeah, it looks like a truck dungeon. There is nothing going on that would make you say, oh, wow, this is nice looking and I wouldn't mind living here.
Growing up, I used to be afraid of walking by a van or a truck because every little kid has been told, don't walk by a van. Mm-hmm. And when I lived in Silicon Valley, I'd go out for a run or something and there'd be so many trucks and vans and people living in cars. Mm-hmm. It totally changed my opinion of it. I mean, it wasn't this stay away from the van. It was like, oh, wow, there are people actually living out here right now by choice.
Yeah.
So it's been like a little bit of a movement. So do you have other truck friends down there?
Oh, absolutely. I have a bunch of people who work at the same company or other companies in the area and are doing very similar things in all different sizes and shapes of vehicles. I've seen things as small as like a Prius and things as large as like a full 40-foot RV or school bus.
What's the deal with parking?
I've never had any problems parking. I just find a quiet, kind of industrially area side street where I am out of people's ways, and that has always suited me very well.
Very nice. So you mentioned that you were trying to save money for early retirement, but were you trying to pay off student loans first?
Yeah, absolutely. I was fortunate in the sense that I graduated college with fairly little debt. I went to a public state school. I graduated with about $23,000 worth of debt. And even that alone, that's about a year's worth of rent in the area. So by living in the truck for a year, I basically canceled out all of the debt that I accumulated in 4 years of college.
That's really impressive. So
insane.
Knocked out your loans, and then maybe a normal person would have said, I'm going to get out of the truck now. But you were like, no, I'm going to stay in this truck. So what was your thought process there?
So for me, it certainly started about just trying to figure out where my priorities lied and what made sense for me. So when I was interning, it didn't really make sense to have a place when all I really needed was a bed. And so my priorities just kind of figured themselves out around that. Over time, I've realized that I do really like the simplicity and the kind of regimentation that the truck forces me to follow. Yeah, the money savings are great, but it's also just a good way to kind of structure my life for the things I'm looking to get out of it. Like I described it, it's pretty inhospitable in its current state. And that's by design. It's meant to be uncomfortable so that it kind of forces me to go out and explore the world and do fun things.
Right. Does it get really hot in there?
Yeah, in the summer during the day, but the general rule is that I try not to be in it after 9 a.m. most days. And I'm a morning person, so I'm normally out of it by 5 or 6.
Are you in killer shape because you have to go to the gym to shower?
I'm definitely in better shape than I have been. I mean, I've always had kind of like a morning workout routine that I've been doing for the past 5 or 6 years, but the truck definitely keeps me honest. I can't really skip days because if I don't go to the gym, I don't really get to shower. And I would feel guilty walking past the gym and watching all those people actually put in real effort and then just skip straight to the shower. So it definitely keeps me honest.
Nice. In terms of how you message the fact that you live in a truck to people, how do you do that?
Like, how do I explain it to people who I'm meeting for the first time?
Yeah, or like coworkers or friends. Just take us through. I mean, are you honest? Do you wait? What do you do?
I guess it depends on how well I know them. For people who I'm just meeting, if they ask where I live and I don't really have any stake one way or the other, I'll just tell them that I live in a truck. Sometimes I'll mention that, oh, you know, you probably heard that story a couple of years ago. And sometimes they have. And that makes it a lot easier to explain. So they're like, oh, yeah, you, I've heard of you. Okay, moving on. But my coworkers actually have no idea. I have intentionally not told any coworkers. I switched teams about 7 months ago. And so no one on my new team has any idea.
Okay, so I have a couple questions.
Yeah.
What do you use as your mailing address? Do you have like a P.O. box or something?
So there's P.O. boxes and then private mailboxes. And private mailboxes look like P.O. boxes, but they actually have like a normal looking address. So they get past a lot of filters that would normally filter out P.O. boxes. So
okay.
I use a private mailbox for pretty much everything.
How do you find one? Is it online?
Yeah, you just search private mailbox and there's dozens in a given area.
Is that like traveling mailbox or is that something completely different?
It is something completely different. Or I'm assuming it is because I've never heard of that.
Yeah, with traveling mailbox, some of our friends use it for keeping a U.S. address when they're living overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So they get all your mail and they have permission to open it. And so they open it and take pictures of everything and then send you it in an email.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, this is not like that. They won't actually open my mail or anything. They'll just store it in what's basically a P.O. box. But if I do get something that's labeled urgent or important, they will call me, which is cool.
Nice. Okay. And then second, how do you handle dating when living in a box?
Dating is a subject I don't really talk about very frequently. I've been in several long-term relationships over the past couple of years. Basically, it boils down to finding people who understand the reasons why I do what I do and whose interests and goals and priorities kind of align with that.
And I mean, I think it would be a great litmus test.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking with people, the topic of housing and rent prices and everything comes up very frequently just because of how outrageous it is out here. So people are certainly more understanding when I kind of frame it the way I've just explained it, where it just didn't make sense for the life that I was living. And it does a lot to kind of keep me moving in the direction that I want to go.
So let's talk money now.
Okay.
So how much does living in a truck box, what are we calling that? Do you have a name for it, by the way?
So sometimes I'll call it Bessie.
Okay.
Like a cow. It's like very ungraceful sounding. But generally, I just call it the truck.
Okay. So how closer to financial independence is living in a truck getting you?
So it's doing pretty well for me. Over the past 2.5 years that I've been doing this, I've saved up about $300,000.
Whoa.
I guess if the target goal is 1 million, which is a fine base case benchmark, then I'm about a third of the way there.
I wonder how many of us had $1 million goals. It's just, that's kind of the FI standard, right? It's like, well, I'll just aim for 1 million. And that seems to work for everybody else, right?
Yeah.
When you are thinking about your life after FI, does it involve tiny living?
Yes. I like to think of the truck as a stepping stone and a progression where I just eventually have less and less. And at some point I have nothing except a backpack and I travel around places. Not to say that I live outside everywhere I go, but I've always been really enamored by the idea of travel. And from the little traveling that I've done in my life, it's very clear to me that I want to do more of it. So I treat FI as kind of an opportunity for me to actually do the kind of uninhibited exploring that I've always wanted to do, where I kind of just plop myself down in a random location and then live there for a little while and get acquainted with the area and the people and ideas. The idea of the truck is that it gets me comfortable with living without a lot so that I can just sell the truck one day, hop on a plane, and then live somewhere for a little while and be happy with the few things I've brought.
That's deep. I like it. I've had a hard time with downsizing and trying to get rid of my stuff. I was clearing out a couple of boxes and I came across all of my DVD covers and cases. Not even the DVDs in themselves. Those were in a different spot. Just the DVD cases. And I was very sad getting rid of those. Like, that's ridiculous. They're empty pieces of plastic. And I still had a hard time.
I see that.
I don't see it at all.
Oh, no.
DVD cases. Who has DVDs anymore?
It's like nostalgia, I guess.
Yeah, these are all the DVDs that I worked so hard to accumulate, you know? Like, people would always come to my room in college because I had all the cool stuff.
Like alcohol?
No, not even alcohol. Like, I had an Xbox 360 and a Wii and a PlayStation 3 and lots of movies. So people would always be hanging out in my room because I had all the cool stuff. And so that's a fond memory for me.
Brandon, okay. So FI, early retirement, did you hear about this before or after the truck?
After the truck. So I had originally just got the truck thinking it was a good way to save money. It would be an interesting experience. I'd learn a little bit about living minimally. And then after some of the initial articles came out, people started reaching out to me and saying, hey, you're in the perfect position to pursue FI or retire early or do whatever you want. I didn't have to do a lot to kind of restructure my finances in the way that made them most suitable for FI. It definitely put me on a slightly different course and gave me some interesting literature to muse over.
How did you restructure your finances?
I made sure that I was maxing out all of the tax-advantaged accounts I had available to me. So I think before I had just been maxing out my 401k, but after reading about FI, I started investing more heavily into my HSA and maxing out all my mega backdoor Roth IRAs and doing the normal backdoor Roth IRA as well.
Oh, so, I'm so jealous. I do not have those options.
Yeah, the mega backdoor Roth IRA, that additional 26 or 27,000 in the IRA is really nice.
Granted, I couldn't do it anyway just because I don't have that kind of extra money to be putting in those accounts, but I would like the opportunity to do so, even if I can't max it all the way out.
Indeed. It definitely helps me put the allocations at least in a place that I'm happy with for FI.
Yep. So we've talked a little bit here about how people can get in on the Roth game if they don't have an employer whose 401k plan lets them do after-tax contributions plus in-service withdrawals. And Gwen and I talked before about you could technically open a solo 401k for a business you have and then pay a little extra for the My Solo 401k plan.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's an option just for people who say they don't have access to that at work. It definitely stinks to not have access. I don't have access anymore. All right. So do you do any investing outside of your retirement plan? Do you do any brokerage stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So once I've maxed out all the retirement accounts, which I do just by normal paycheck deduction, so any leftover money I have just in my paycheck, because I don't really have a ton of expenses aside from insurance, that just goes into a brokerage account. I'm invested in two index funds, one that tracks the entire U.S. market and one that tracks the entire international market. And the ratio I hold those two in varies, but it's a pretty simple setup.
Nice. So when you're not in your truck or hanging out with your friends, what are your other hobbies?
I make a lot of really stupid websites. That's one of my hobbies.
That's awesome. What's the dumbest one that you've made?
Okay, I'm going to try to cut this story down because it's a long one. But I used to own the domain name, a Uruguayan domain name called isagreatg.ui. So it just looked like it said, is a great guy. Because I had a coworker who would always say, you know, Bill is a great guy and he does a lot for this organization. Then he would say, but, and then he would say some terrible stuff about Bill. And he did it so often that I bought the domains. I could send him links that were basically bill.isagreatg.ui/who-does-a-lot-for-this-company. It was kind of just a gag thing, but Uruguayan domains are kind of expensive. You're supposed to have a business or something in Uruguay, so I think I had to set up like a fake shell corporation in Uruguay so that I could own the domain, which is kind of pricey.
That's a funny one.
That is dedication right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sold that one last year. I had no interest in holding on to that and keeping that shell corporation going.
How much did it sell for?
Oh, it didn't sell for anything. I just let it expire.
You let it expire. Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, someone else thought it was really funny, too. That's awesome. Okay. Have you turned any of those websites into profit?
I have a lot of random side websites. Like, the blog is probably the biggest and most popular one. But I have no interest in making them profitable. I guess I don't want the blog to be monetized because the original fame kind of came from who my employer was at the time. So I didn't want to be profiting off of basically my employer's name, which I thought would be kind of strange. It's like a side thing I maintain. I already have a very fine source of income. I don't really need to go into monetization and then muddy up the UI with ads.
Mm-hmm. That definitely makes sense.
I understand.
Yeah, most of them are just for fun.
Jay might not, but I get it.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of opinions on that, but we're just going to table that for now. Okay, cool. So you have a lot of different fun things going on. So do you do any organized sports or any other hobbies outside of work?
I pick things up and put them down. That's about the as close to a sport as I get. I have the coordination skills of a small child, so sport's definitely not my thing. I do a lot of biking and hiking, less so that it's getting a little bit cooler out here now.
Cool. Okay, the reason I'm asking is when I lived and worked in Silicon Valley, at lunch, everyone, when I went to lunch with them, they'd always, the conversation turned into video games somehow. No matter what we were talking about, all of a sudden it just went right to video games. Is that the culture of where you work? And how do you relate to that if you have no gaming setup in your box?
Yeah, no gaming setup because I don't have electricity. I guess I could game on my laptop if I wanted, but I don't really have much interest in doing that. The team that I'm currently on is a bit of an older demographic, so the conversation normally switches to what horrifying thing their child did that day. Definitely for younger teams, I can see it kind of devolving into talking about video games, but I'm not really pressured by any of my teammates and their non-Luddite ways.
So in terms of any secret personal finance hacks that you've discovered that you want to share, do you have any that come to mind?
Obviously, the biggest way that I save money is by living minimally and not having to pay rent. But I think my financial strategy is very straightforward. Max out all the tax-advantaged accounts and then put everything else into regular taxable accounts once you've done that. And that's really it. I don't really play around with cryptocurrencies or alternative investments. I've looked into like peer-to-peer lending and REITs just to get a little more diversity into the mix. But even that hasn't been really compelling enough for me to do anything more than the very simple international and index fund stock split that I've been doing now.
What about entrepreneurship? Another conversation topic on weekends living in Silicon Valley was, it was either, what do you think about AI? Which if anyone asks me that again, I'm going to go berserk.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah?
What do you think about AI?
Don't even, Gwen, don't even right now. So it's either that or it was about the startup scene, what new startup someone is doing or interested in. Mm-hmm. Have you been tempted by any of that stuff?
I definitely hear about it. And I'm definitely exposed to it. I think the extent of my startupiness and entrepreneurshipiness ends at the random websites I make and maintain. So I have probably 15 or 20 of them that I work on a semi-regular basis. But none of them have any potential for becoming viable businesses at any point in the future. So that's why I hesitate to call it actual entrepreneurship. I do want to build bigger things and I want to create and I do have that drive to do things. But my job is just so cushy and comfortable that I have no motivation to actually explore these things beyond what I normally do. I guess I would rather spend my free time riding a bike and then sitting in a cafe and write blog posts than trying to get VC funding for the next blockchain-based technology.
That's awesome. So any advice for people on how to get a job at one of these great employers and have the cushy lifestyle and the money and all of that too? What would you say to people?
So the biggest thing for getting a job here, or at least in my experience, because a lot of my coworkers went to name brand schools like the Ivy League schools, and that makes it a little bit easier. But I went to just a normal state school that isn't particularly known for computer science or anything, and I actually didn't even study computer science. I studied computer engineering, which is a little bit different and less relevant. But what I would say got me my job is my internship. Interning at the company first and kind of getting that experience, and then find the team actually liking me and wanting to keep me on, was enough for me to get my foot in the door. Then once I got on, I was able to work there for a few months, get promoted, and then switch to whatever team I found that I thought was interesting. So there are certainly opportunities out there, but I think an internship is the best way to get in the door because the standards are a little bit lower than for the general hiring pool. I think companies are more willing to take chances with interns because there's less of a commitment on both ends.
So if you're not 20, what else can you do?
So I would say the other thing that really got me, the reason I was able to get the job and hold it, is most of my experience and most of the things I use in my day-to-day work didn't come from school. They came from just my personal projects. And I hesitate to kind of push that because there's always this weird idea that is pervasive in computer science that doesn't really exist in other jobs where you're supposed to like enjoy programming and you're supposed to eat, sleep, and breathe programming all the time, even when you're not working. Personally, that's the case for me. And I'm always very grateful that the things I like to do and the things that make money and the things I'm good at are all the same thing. But if you are interested in computer science, working on side projects to hone that craft, then you have something to show for it and you can kind of show that to potential employers. And you also just have a broader skill set that you can utilize in the workplace. So I would say if you aren't in school and looking for internships, and maybe you're already out in the field, personal projects and self-guided work are definitely a great way to get your foot in the door.
I'm going to plus 100 that. I completely agree. And I have made side projects and then shared them with people in interviews. And I think I've gotten jobs because of that. It makes you stand apart from everyone else who has similar resume. And they see you as a self-starter and people are very interested in that topic. Now, the funny thing is, once I actually get the job, I never once mention my side hustles again because I don't want them to doubt my commitment to the company. People don't typically ask me about them. I definitely think that anyone out there who's looking to switch into a different field and doesn't want to go the education route, or even if they do that route, they should add a side project on top of it that demonstrates those skills.
Well, good thing that I'm going to do the whole freelancing thing because I am not about doing computer science-y side hustles. I'm in IT as well, but I am terrible at coding. If I had to code my way out of a box to live, I would die.
You don't have to code. You just have to make something online.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it depends what job you want. Are you an engineer?
Yes.
What's an example of a side project that you've done or you would suggest someone do if they want to get a job as an engineer at one of these top companies?
The thing I would suggest is doing things you're passionate about because that will give you the motivation to keep working on them and not just let it fizzle out after a little while. Personally, the projects that do that for me are normally things I think of in the spur of the moment. Or I guess one thing that I always keep coming back to is every year I make a Christmas gift website for my friends where it's a game that they'll fight against each other online in real time for my money around Christmas. And I'm always very motivated to make those because that's super entertaining for me.
Wait, what are you talking about? This sounds hilarious.
Oh, so every year for Christmas, I will make a different website for my friends where they fight for my money. For an example, one year was an online version of Cards Against Humanity, where I added some cards relevant to my own specific friend group. And then whoever got the first was the first to 10 cards, they won a prize. Another year, it was a 6-person version of Bomberman that was played out online on a hex grid. Or like another year, it was a version of Texas Hold'em that also incorporated the drinking game Kings.
Oh, that's so much fun.
When you're saying fight for your money, are you talking about like $20 or a gift card to Applebee's? What are the prizes?
Oh, it's gone up in years as I've had more money to give. I think last year it was $500, and I think this year will be $1,000.
What? Okay, so how many friends do you have, and is your friend list expanding to get on this game?
And how do we get in on that?
Yeah, we are. Are we friends now?
Oh, no. This is just my hometown group of friends. There's 6 of us. And I compete in the mix too sometimes to try to salvage some of that money. But they get so competitive about it that I normally don't win anything back.
That's awesome.
That's hilarious. It's kind of like a gladiator fight, you know, fight to the death for your money.
But way nerdier and way sadder.
Oh my. Okay. Brandon, this has been a lot of fun. We are so glad to have you on. We're going to go into our final two questions now. The first one, if any listeners have any follow-up questions for you or want to learn more about you, where can they find more information on you?
So my blog is frominsidethebox.com, and you can reach me at brandon@frominsidethebox.com. That's probably the best avenue to reach me is via email, though I will admit that I am occasionally extremely terrible at responding to emails. But that is the best way to reach me, and I will do my best to respond.
All right. And Gwen, do you want to kick off the last question?
I do, actually. So Brandon, if you could do anything, have anything in the world, what would be your wildest dream?
My wildest dream?
Your number one object on your bucket list.
So at the beginning of 2016, I had traveled to exactly zero countries. I actually did not even have a passport. At the end of this year, I think the list is now probably 8 or 9 countries. So I'm starting to get my feet wet, but I certainly have a long way to go. And I'm a firm believer that all of the interesting ideas in the world are hiding in other people's heads, and that traveling is the only good way to go out there and actually listen to those ideas and hear what these people have to say. I guess my number one bucket list item is just to live a life where I actually do get to hear those ideas and learn from other people and experience interesting experiences. That's pretty high and overarching and isn't really anything specific. But I think the way my life currently is right now, I'm very contented with it. I'm very happy with what I'm able to do and the resources I have in my life. The goal I have is reaching the point where I can actually travel full time, work on side projects whenever I want, do contract work whenever I want just for fun, and really get out there and see what the world has to offer.
I love it. That's really profound.
Well, thank you so much, Brandon, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Go to our website, firedrillpodcast.com, to continue the discussion and get the link to our private Facebook group.
If you like us, leave us a review on iTunes. If you're like me, you have no idea how to do that. So in the podcast app or in iTunes, search for Fire Drill Podcast, find it, click the Reviews tab, and write something to make my mother proud of me. We read every single review and want to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts for making this podcast possible.